didn't even speak to him. We never called him to the Torah or gave him any respect at all. Yidden, the entire world rested upon his shoulders. All of Chenstikov, all the world, was alive only because of him. We have to beg his forgiveness and for the mercy of God.
Not one resident of Chenstikov missed attending that Levaya, and they all went to the cemetery to pay their last respects to the Schwarze Wolf. A year later, just as the Tzaddik had predicted, the Rebbe and Rebbetzin were blessed with a son, and they made sure to name him Schwarze Wolf after the great Tzaddik. That child was my grandfather. So, a good Shabbos to you all. Please, don't forget my story. Tell it to your children and grandchildren. May you have many.
Rabbi Yaakov Yisroel of Cherkom, of blessed memory, was accustomed to go out in the middle of the night, alone with only his shamus. They would go to distant places near the war zone and listen to the calls of the soldiers who were stationed at distant camps. The callers would call out to each other in Russian.
Hi, hi, slushate! Hi, hi, slushate!
Which means, listen, listen. The Rebbe would stand for a long time and listen to the calls. Eventually, his shamus asked him exactly what was he listening for. The Rebbe answered,
hear this. Amongst the voices of the Gentiles, there is the voice of a lone Jewish soldier, one of the 36 hidden tzaddikim, calling out into the long night of exile. Listen.
Hi, hi, slushite. 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 Oy, oy, shchinta begalusa. Oy, oy, shchinta begalusa. Oy, oy, the Shechina is in exile. Oy, oy, the Shechina is in exile.
It seemed as though this would be an ordinary journey when the Moshem Tov told his Gentile driver, Alexei, to prepare the horses and carriage to travel. He then fetched three of his disciples, and they all sped off.
Yeah!
Alexei! Drop the reins, and let the horses go where they may.
Alexei was, of course, used to the horses finding their own way on such travels with his master. So he began to doze off as the carriage flew along toward whatever mission in the service of the Lord he had in store. But by the second day of traveling, the Baal Shem Tov's disciples began to notice that they'd been winding through an unfamiliar forest for quite some time, and they began to feel concerned.
Master, this forest seems to be getting thicker and thicker. The trees are even blocking out the sunlight. When will this journey end? And what will be in store for us at our destination?
Have no fear, for the Holy One guides the steps of man.
The Holy Baal Shem Tov truly believed every word of his advice to his student, but he too began to have a feeling that his supernatural powers were ebbing away, and fast. Pondering over this puzzle, with the horses galloping all the while, the Baal Shem Tov fell into an exhausted, much-needed sleep.
Maybe something important will be revealed to the Rebbe in a dream,
one disciple said to another. But when the Baal Shem Tov awoke, he had neither information nor words of encouragement for his by now truly frightened Hasidim. Suddenly, at about midday,
look, Rebbe, a light in the distance.
Yes, I see it. Perhaps we shall yet find a Jewish home to stay in, for Shabbos fast approaches.
Well, there in the clearing, I think I can see a small cottage. And yes, I'm almost positive. I can see a mezuzah on the door.
Why don't we knock and ask to stay for Shabbos? We don't have much of a choice anyway.
And so the Baal Shem Tov and his three Hasidim decided to try knocking on the door of the old, broken-down cottage.
There'd better be a good reason for waking me. And who in the...
They saw the most revolting, unkempt, ragged man one could imagine. His clothes were a bunch of greasy, filthy rags sewn together. His breath had a nauseating peas and carrots scent of one who had just had a hangover. He was barefoot. He was sickening. And he was wild-eyed.
I'm giving you exactly 3 seconds to come up with a good excuse for waking me up. 1, 2...
Sir, do not be angry. We have lost our way and we need a place to stay for Shabbos. Would you be so kind as to let us?
Don't even say another word. I know about your type. You look like a bunch of Hasidim with your stupid fur hats on your heads and payas hanging down to the ground. You people make me sick. I don't want you hanging out here for another minute.
Then is there another place in the vicinity where we can stay for Shabbos?
No, the closest village is at least a day's journey from here.
And with that, the wild Jewish peasant slammed the door right in their faces. Seeing that the situation was hopeless, the group went around to the side of the cottage, rapped on the window pane, and called in,
"Please, sir, we'll even pay you 100 times the price of food, and we won't be any bother. You won't even know we're here. Please."
And so, after much bitter pleading and begging, the peasant agreed to let them stay.
But only under 3 conditions, you hear? 1, you do all your prayers silently. I don't need all my goyish clients who buy my whiskey being scared away by you 4 Mishagoyim wailing about all the angels like a bunch of lunatics. 2, you pray fast. I don't serve breakfast at 5 in the afternoon. And 3, I don't want to hear all kinds of questions about the kosherness of the food. Either you eat it or don't, but no talking about it. Do I make myself clear?
We will fulfill your conditions, and we sincerely thank you for your generous hospitality.
So the Hasidim unloaded their belongings and took them into the cottage so they could prepare for the coming Shabbos. Then the Baal Shem Tov approached the peasant innkeeper and asked him,
"Is there a stream or river nearby? I would like to immerse myself in honor of the Shabbos."
"What? You bunch of sickos! Out with you! Get out! You don't know how to be happy with my hospitality? Then you can really go jump in a lake! Out! Out!"
The raving mad peasant then hurled the nearest bag out the door, cursing and screaming all the while. It took the Baal Shem Tov a good half hour to calm the peasant and make him agree to let them stay, though it was questionable if they really wanted to stay in the home of such a ferocious peasant. For the first time, the Baal Shem Tov and his disciples were able to get a good look at the house of the peasant. There was almost nothing to show that a human lived there. The table was a termite-infested plank of rotten wood, supported by 4 slimy posts. The Rebbe and his Hasidim huddled in a corner unhappily, waiting to see some sign of the peasant innkeeper preparing for Shabbos. But all the man did was to sit in the opposite corner of the room, twiddling his thumbs and staring at his 4 guests with a violent, seething fury in his eyes. All of a sudden, the ruffian produced from behind him a large axe. The Hasidim's heart skipped a beat, and they feared for the worst. The innkeeper let out an uproarious laugh, pulled out a watermelon, placed it on the table, and with 1 chop of his axe, split the watermelon in 2. He then proceeded to slurp up the fruit, spitting the seeds all over the floor.
"Maybe this man doesn't even keep Shabbos,"
one of the students asked another. Hearing this, the Baal Shem Tov said,
"One must always judge favorably, even in such a seemingly unusual case."
At that moment, about 5 minutes before candle lighting time, the peasant took a smelly, mildewed burlap sack and spread it over the table. Then he took a piece of half-hardened mud, plopped it in the center of the table, and drove a candle into the center of it, which he then lit in honor of the Shabbos. The Hasidim could not tell whether their host had prayed the afternoon service or not, but he immediately launched into a hurried version of Kabbalah Shabbos. Skipping half the words, the peasant kept throwing sideways glances at the guests to remind them not to take too long to pray. After the davening was over, the Baal Shem wished his host a
good Shabbos,
to which the peasant replied,
"You dumb, bumbling, barbaric, Hasidic idiot! Keep your good Shabbos to yourself!"
Then they tried to sing Shalom Aleichem, to which the host replied,
Stop it! Stop it! Shut up! Shut up! Shut up! When I want you to sing, I'll say so! Now it's time for Kiddush!
He took a glass and filled it with what looked like dregs of a brandy keg, and began to make Kiddush over it.
Won't you please let us also recite Kiddush, sir?
Does it look to you like I mean to give out my tasty wine to the likes of your type? Here!
And with that, he poured the last remaining drops on the dirt floor.
Make your Kiddush on that!
He then washed his hands with some gray water that was sitting in a bucket, and made the blessing for bread over a heavy pumpernickel loaf. He didn't